Last week, I had a chat with Elliot Murphy. In 2009, he did a short tour of the USA East Coast with his band, the Normandy All-Stars, featuring longtime guitarist Olivier Durand. His first album, Aqua Show, released in 1973, is regarded as a classic. His new CD-DVD release, Alive in Paris, finds him still rocking all these 36 years later. Why don't you tell me, what were the earliest musical influences that you had?
I think that I remember the first song I really fell in love with was Runaround Sue by Dion. And I suppose that was somewhere around 1960 or something like that. It was around the time I started playing the guitar, around that time when I was 12. So yeah, it was around 60, 61. So that was the first song that I really fell in love with. But I think in terms of influences, that early folk period, you know, the Kingston Trio and all that stuff. And I had the first Bob Dylan album back then in the early 60s. Then, of course, when the English invasion hit, you know, everyone wanted to be in a band like that. And I was in a number of bands like that, one of which won the New York State Battle of the Bands in 1960.
What was the name of that band?
That band was called the Rapscallions.
Okay, now, I have gotten a bunch of your stuff, like I said, from Buffalo. So there was some stuff recorded as the Murphys with you and your brother. Is that correct? Or
yes,
was, is that just a name that was tagged on there?
To Aqua Show.
Right.
That was a brief period. There was a period there we had a band called Elliot Murphy's Aqua Show, but when we got Polydor got interested, they didn't want to sign the band. They just wanted to sign me and my brother, so the band kind of got imploded, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my brothers were the Murphys for a little bit with one other member, George Gates, and we recorded those. They were kind of the demos for Aqua Show.
Right. Now, speaking of Aqua Show, who was, at some point, somebody, quote, discovered you, or there was a catalyst that kind of took you to the next level of signing with Polydor? Who was that person? Was there
not? There were two things happened in parallel, and it was amazing. It was just like the stars were aligned in the perfect way. First of all, I met this guy named Paul Nelson, who worked at Mercury Records, and Paul was a legendary music critic. He had gone to college with Bob Dylan out in Minnesota. He had started a folk magazine kind of like Sing Out called the Little Sandy Review. He had defended Dylan going electric and Sing Out. I think that lost him all his pure folk friends.
Right.
And he was also, at this time, he was the head of A&R for Mercury, and he was the first one who really came down and saw me with another writer named Bud Scapa, who wrote an article about me. My first published article ever was in Penthouse magazine.
All right.
Great to be out, be able to go out and buy 10 copies of Penthouse.
You know? Yeah.
And but at the same time, at Polydor, there was a guy named Peter Siegel, who was the head of A&R there, who kind of came from the same scene as Paul. He was in a folk group in Greenwich Village called the Even Dozen Jug Band, which included Maria Muldaur and Steve Katz and a lot of people. And actually, Paul wanted to sign me to Mercury, but Mercury told him he could either sign the New York Dolls or me. Only one. So, and since I guess the Dolls were there first, they signed the Dolls. And Polydor, where Peter Siegel was, he signed me there. But it was Paul's review. Paul was also writing for Rolling Stone, and it was his review of my first album, Aqua Show, in Rolling Stone. It was a lead review with also with Bruce Springsteen's second album, and that's what started the whole new Bob Dylan thing for me and Bruce, was that review. So both those things kind of happened at once.
Yeah, that brings me to the next point I had here. I seem to me I remember a story you told or something. Didn't they kind of market you as the, quote, suburban Bob Dylan or something like that? Is that what the catchphrase they used or something?
I don't know if they used Bob's name, so to speak. They kind of let that speak for itself.
Right, right.
But I did have a song on that album called White Middle Class Blues.
Right.
And a writer for Newsweek came to my show at Hofstra University in Long Island when I opened for the Kinks. And she wrote an article about me in Newsweek, and it was all about the kind of the poets of the suburbs. And it was about me and Billy Joel. He was the other artist.
Oh, interesting, huh?
So that's really where that got started.
Uh-huh.
I think it was called Murphy's Middle Class Blues was the name of the article. So I had that going on. Same thing, I had the new Bob Dylan thing going on. The more literate rock critics were into my F. Scott Fitzgerald thing. So,
well, you were highly literate in terms of your lyrics and stuff, for sure. So, I mean, all of those are sort of relevant comparisons, I think. They had also, didn't you tell me a story about this image they had of you in a poster or a parade and all this kind of stuff in white? Or what was, do you remember
that?
Well,
that was a funny story. Polydor Records was a new record company. They were a German company that were just setting up shop in New York, and they had signed James Brown. That was their major artist, and Roy Buchanan and myself, a few others. And they didn't really have a publicity department, so to speak. So they would hire, like, Madison Avenue ad agencies. And one of them, we had a, it was something right out of the movies, out of Putney Swope. I don't know if you remember that.
Yep, movie. I remember it.
Actually, that was produced by Robert Downey Sr., who was Robert Downey Jr.'s father.
Yep.
And they hired this ad agency to kind of come up with a campaign for me. And we had a meeting, and then 2 weeks later, they come up with this campaign, which would have involved me walking down Broadway dressed in robes, holding my lyrics up, like the end is near, you know, in the side of my head with a car next to me blasting my music. But I nixed that.
Oh, like you didn't quite want to play that role, huh?
No.
Now, in the initial period, you had four albums, right?
In the 70s.
70s,
yeah.
That's what I mean. That was like the beginnings. As I remember, the reviews were like universally excellent, and you were doing some amount of touring. In reality, did the good reviews and the touring and stuff translate into something in terms of sales and expanding your audience that was, or was it a rock critic darling type of situation, sort of?
In retrospect, it seems like it was the best of times and the worst of times. I mean, it was a time when good reviews had some weight to them. And if not only within the industry, not only did the music business pay attention to them, but also people did. People read Rolling Stone reviews, kind of like a Bybuck and Cream magazine and a few other publications. Chris Gow in the Village Voice, Robert Hilburn out in L.A. And I had all those on my side. And I was touring. Aquasha was selling pretty good. But my main problem was Polydor. They just weren't really set up to deliver, you know. They were such a new company. And then I jumped to RCA for the next two albums. But while we were struggling in America and trying to get things happening, it was happening in Europe, which is, and I didn't even know it, you know, until I came there. And when all this was over and those first four albums were, you know, Polydor, two on RCA and one on Columbia even.
Mm-hmm.
Which also, by today's standards, they probably would have sold okay, but I think they were really looking for, you know, huge sales and hit singles, which we never really had.
Yeah.
But while we were struggling with that in America, it was happening in Europe, we had some hits here. I didn't even know about it till I got here in 79. Anastasia, a song from Just Story for America, had been like a top 10 hit in France. And so I guess in some way it paid off in a kind of backhanded way.
Well, that's called collateral damage or collateral benefits, right?
I think it's collateral benefits.
It is, yeah. You actually kind of skipped a question that I'm going to talk about Europe actually coming up, but is there a personal favorite that you have of that early period in terms of a record?
I think Aqua's show is always the one closest to my heart because it was, you know, anyone's first album. It's like all your hopes and dreams through rock and roll.
The first cut is the deepest, right?
Yeah. The ironic thing for me is the first song on my first album began with the last.
There you go.
Last of the rock stars.
Yeah, there you go. Well, then I did have this transition was all planned, Elliot. Okay, you understand.
Okay. You but I realize I did skip your question.
Well, the question was, why did you move to Europe? And you already, in fact, answered that with having hit singles and you had met.
Well, I guess in a way, I'd shot my wand in America. You know, I'd been on three major labels, done a lot of touring. Done those great reviews, gotten those great reviews, but the sales just didn't equal to what the expectations were, you know? Now, a lot of that was my own fault, I have to say. You know, I had no patience.
You were young.
I was put on some weird tours, like opening for Sha Na Na through Canada. That's a strange place to put a singer-songwriter on tour. And in the business, it just seemed like I was thrown into an ocean full of sharks there, you know, and I was just really struggling to save my life. I had some personal problems as well, which I overcame later on. But I don't know, I'm so grateful that through all that, the albums still stand up. You know, all those albums have been re-released on a number of occasions and still get re-released. And people talk about them and ask about them. Aquashow was featured in Uncut magazine, which is a UK prestigious magazine. They called it an album classic, you know, just last
year. But that's not available on CD at this point, right?
Not at this point. It was released on CD a couple of times in Europe and once in Japan, but the last time was a good 10 years ago, so we're trying to get them to do it again.
Yeah, that's the one that I don't have, actually. I'd love that one on CD.
Last time I checked on eBay, there was one gone for $430, if you're interested.
Hey, I'll fire up the old computer as soon as we're done, okay?
Okay.
Now, you had a hit in France, you said. So this question relates to then and now. France is a very good country for you. What are the best countries in terms of you having a good audience if you come, or even sales to some extent, though that's just, you know, secondary.
Well, France opened the door in that I came here in 79. I did my first European show here, and I was expecting to be in a little club with a couple hundred people, and actually it was a couple of thousand people, and we did six encores, and it was like I had a second act, you know. I saw my future. I saw the future of Elliot Murphy, and it was called Europe, you know.
Well, that's a good future, I think, man. It's been good, right?
It's been a great, really great for me. And France opened the door, but honestly, I think now we probably play more shows in Spain than anywhere else. You know, I maybe do about 40 shows a year in Spain. Yeah. We've got a great public there. The sales there are pretty good, as well as Italy, Belgium, Scandinavia, all over the continent, really.
That's great. This is just an aside. Do you speak more languages than English and rock and roll?
Well, I do speak French.
French, okay.
Been here for 20 years. I mean, I speak French with my, they still kid me about my accent.
Your franglais, is that it? No, it's not.
Franglais, yeah. Well, the way to get the French to speak English is to speak French to them with a bad accent. They just can't stand it. You know?
Yeah, that's it. Now, Gaspard, in 96, he was, 10 years old or something, I think, maybe?
Uh-huh.
And today, he's interested in music. How did this come about? Is it genetic, or did he just, decide one day he wanted to play guitar and he wanted to do this kind of thing?
It came about, I guess, because I never pushed him. I did buy him a nice little classical guitar that I found in a luthier shop down in, Sevilla in Spain. I brought it home and when he was about 11, and, you know, a week later there were holes in the guitar and skateboard decals all over it. So I said, well, I guess it's not going to work, you know.
Yeah.
But a year later, we were walking past a music store in Paris, and Gaspard saw this Fender Telecaster in the window. He said, oh, Daddy, I love that guitar.
Uh-huh.
So he went in and tried it. You know, it couldn't really play, but he said, oh, if I had that. So I got him it. And, man, once he picked it up, he kind of, like me, once I picked up the guitar, I never put it down, and neither is he. His music is very different from mine. Of course, he's from, you know, almost two generations away.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah.
But he's interested in all kinds of music. I guess for him, his influence, you know, the world began with Van Halen or something.
Yeah, well, it maybe even began later than that, actually, huh?
Maybe later. I mean, Van Halen is like going back a long way.
Yeah, that's those guys are oldies by now, you know?
Yeah, it's like when I looked at John Lee Hooker or something, you know.
Now, has he ever recorded anything, or recorded with you, perhaps, I think, maybe?
He has recorded me. He's played guitar on a couple of my albums. Played on Canaries in the Mine. I think that was on Coming Home Again. He played and kind of really arranged one called Frankenstein's Daughter on the last studio album, which was Notes from the Underground. And my new album, which we're doing now, he's really producing it. He's become a whiz in the studio, and he's producing it, so we'll see.
And so he's going to college. Is he going to try and create some kind of career in the music business, if not necessarily like yours?
That's the goal. I think he is casting a wider net than me. I mean, I'm basically a strummer and a rhymer, as they call them. But he is very proficient in studio techniques, and he really wants to be a producer, as well as, you know, a guitarist and a singer and a songwriter.
No. I hear you've played with Springsteen. How did that come about? You're like pals with him or something, right?
Bruce and I began our friendship almost around the time of my first album. Paul Nelson, who I mentioned earlier, he took me to see Bruce at Max's Kansas City, even before I recorded Aqua Show, and I met Bruce and shook his hand and looked him in the eye, and I liked the guy right away. And I loved that first album, Greetings from Asbury Park. I was listening to that all the time while I was doing Aqua Show. And we just, you know, the friendship grew, and he'd come to my shows. I'd play in New Jersey. Of course, I went to lots of his shows. And then when he came to Europe, I think it was in 92, he invited me on stage to sing Rock Ballad, one of my songs, with him.
Yeah.
And he's invited me on stage many times with him now, particularly in Paris, but also a couple other shows around Europe. And he sang on one of my albums, on Selling the Gold, on a song called Everything I Do Brings Me Back to You. And even brought Gaspar on tour with him as an apprentice with the sound company on the last tour.
Whoa, there you go. So Gaspar is really getting his feet wet in a good way, being in the studio and going on tour and all of that kind of stuff. Not exactly the way you started, huh?
Not exactly. Well, the business has changed
so
much. And I started kind of in the classic way, you know, was playing in clubs and around New York City and pounding the pavements and trying to get people to listen to your demo. You didn't really have the possibility to record anything professional sounding until you were signed to a label, but all that's changed now.
Yeah. Now, we met in 96 when you were doing a little sort of 30-day cruise around the United States, playing little places. You just, I think you played some dates maybe in California a couple years ago or something, and I just noticed, and I found out too late, unfortunately, you did a little multi-date East Coast tour. You know, how did that go over?
I had not played America in over 10 years, and I had not played the West Coast in 12 years, and Ann Layton, with a publicist slash manager, got in touch with me, and she represented a young singer-songwriter named Jan Close, and she had this concept that I should come back, go on tour, and have Jan Close open for me, and it would be a great package. And, and you know, what kind of motivated me to do it was because Gaspar's in school there, so it would give me even more opportunity to go see him. So I said, okay, why not? And we've now done, I think, three little East Coast tours. One was duo, and two have been with the band, and then we did another duo West Coast tour. And it's, of course, it's not like when I play in Europe. You know, we have pretty big crowds here, and it's something that's been building for 20 years. But it is very, it's very nice how the old fans come out to the shows, you know.
And it's like club dates and stuff, right?
Yeah, it's like club dates, and people bring me 30 albums to sign. They've been waiting 35 years to see me, and it's nice to play for an audience that understands English.
Yeah.
For one thing. So I think we're going to continue doing this. I've kind of put my foot in the water, and, you know, the bulk of my career is still really Europe-oriented, but...
Sure.
You know, I love playing for the fans. It's very gratifying, the response I get and the things people say to me. So I'll keep coming back.
It's kind of cool coming back home and being sort of like, wow, he's now some star over in Paris or something like that, right?
Well, they say the number one rule of show business is if you want to be missed, you got to go away.
Yep, that's it.
Maybe I took that to heart too much.
Well, I don't know. It sounds like things are going well, including this this new album you have with the DVD. I think it's kind of a cool big deal, right? Tell me about the album and everything surrounding it.
The package is called Alive in Paris, and it's a DVD and a CD. And what happened was, a year ago I had an exhibition in Paris called The Last of the Rockstars, Elliot Murphy. And it was at Paris is divided into arrondissements. They divide the city up, and each arrondissement has a very beautiful city hall. And the one in near Saint-Germain in Paris, they approached me to do this exhibition, which we did there for like a month. And my wife, Françoise, and also the University of Paris, were involved in getting everything together. So we just, the fans dragged out every piece of Murphy memorabilia you can imagine, you know. So there was like posters and photos and little scripts of lyrics, you know, that people had picked up, and just hundreds and hundreds of items. Also all the album covers and everything else. And it was quite successful. I mean, we had a couple of thousand visitors come through. And then the last night we did a show, and the show was recorded and filmed by the University of Paris. And I wasn't expecting to put it out, but it came out really great. And once I heard it, I said, oh, when I saw it, I said, we got to put this out. And so we did.
So you also mentioned a little earlier that you're working on a new studio album. That's, and Gaspar's involved in some way. Is this studio album becoming more concrete, and is that planned for any specific time in the near future?
The projected release would be sometime in autumn 2010. Although with me, we still on?
Yeah, we're still there.
Okay. Strange noise. Mm. With me, you know, it's just continuous, the touring and the recording and the writing. It's sometimes it's hard to separate one album from the next, because I'm always writing. I got a great band, the Normandy All Stars, with an incredible guitarist, Olivier Durand. So I'm always throwing new songs at them at soundcheck, and once we start playing them live, we want to record them. So, but this new thing, I think this could be a little bit special because Gaspar is producing it, very different sound than normally, and it'll come out in September or October, I believe.
So the possibility after that's out, you'll make another visit over here?
Absolutely. We want to get back to the West Coast, and I think that would be probably, you know, I usually do it every year about this time, November.
Mm-hmm.
November, because then I come back to Paris with my son for Christmas. So
he's back in Paris with you now for Christmas, huh?
He is here, yeah.
Okay, cool. All right.